This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm John, and this week we are doing our mayoral elections post-mortem. In a little bit, we're going to talk to those nice guys at the centre of the cities about the policy implications of last week's results. But first up, I've got the politics gang back in to talk about, you know, what we got wrong and why. So here's Stephen Bush and Patrick McGuire. All right, lads.
Hello.
How you doing?
So how do you think we scored?
Quite poorly.
By any measure. I'm going to go with, when you say what we got wrong, I'm going to go with everything.
I think, to be fair, we only got the marginal elections wrong.
Which was 4 out of 5.
The dead certs, we called those perfectly.
But you don't get to, like, you know, they're not. It's not like an exam papers. You don't get to be like, oh, you know, I aced the Liverpool paper. Yeah, I successfully predicted a Conservative victory in Cambridgeshire and Peterborough.
To be fair, though, we did do both those things. We did correctly call both those mayors. So let's list some things we got wrong. So, west of England, we all thought that push comes to shove, the Lib Dems would do that.
I mean, everyone was guilty until last Thursday of talking about the Lib Dems, weren't they? And now I think they've proven that they've just not got it. They're flatlining.
I think the Lib Dems is a really interesting example of overcorrection. A lot of people, at one point in 2016, I didn't think the Lib Dem fight back was that much of a thing going into the 2016 local elections. It turned out it was. I then kind of went, okay, you've got to take them seriously in Witney and Richmond, when they then exceeded expectations. But I then kind of went, oh, well, I now need to take them even more seriously. A lot of people didn't take them seriously until after Richmond, and they kind of went, oh my God, they're going to come first, they're going to, you know, replace Labour, etc., etc. So there was, I think with the Lib Dems, there was a problem of overcorrection, not just with us, but with pundits in general.
And, you know, in some ways, the west of England was the worst for this because, you know, we all thought Stephen Williams, the Lib Dem candidate, might win when, in fact, he came third and so didn't make it into the runoff. But he wasn't that far behind Lithley Mansell of Labour. Like, you know, it wouldn't have been inconceivable that he would have made the runoff, in which case he could plausibly have won. And at least the Lib Dems were polling at like 20% there, as opposed to the 6 or 7% they got in many of the more urban regions.
Yeah, I mean, I think the striking thing in terms of, you know, to sort of move back to my day job, as it were, when I'm not moonlighting over here in Scotland, is what I thought was very troubling for the Lib Dems is if you look at the kind of 10,000 votes they got out of the whole of Bath and North East Somerset, right, where realistically, the Labour vote that's not in Bath there is former mining towns, you know, Wansdyke, Radstock, etc., etc., largely white working class, all of the kind of voters who everywhere else deserted the Labour Party. So you kind of think, well, it can't have been those people, which means that Labour, of the like 6,000 votes Labour got, probably at least 4,000 of them came out of Bath itself. The Lib Dems only got 10,000 votes out of it, so that is very close to coming, you know, a week, you know, second or indeed third in somewhere they held until 2015. Mm-hmm. So they did very badly. One, you know, to continue my boring on about the supplementary vote is a trash system, right? People, there were 2/3 of all second preferences didn't count in the West of England mayor, because you had to guess.
Had to guess who was going to be in the runoff. Well, let's move on to something else we got wrong then, which is I think there was a consensus around this table that it was difficult to see where Tory second preferences were going to come from. And
well, such is the best criticism against the Progressive Alliance that people don't vote in the way that you expect them to if their first choice isn't there. And that's the thing. Also, I think the mayoral element, say Andy Street, for instance. You're voting for Andy Street, the man, you're not voting for the Tory. So even if you are a bit squeamish about voting for a Tory, I think people in these elections, and given that, I think for, unlike you, say, John, a lot of people would have interpreted this as a chance to put another cross in a box rather than, oh, I'm voting for my, you know, the godfather of my city region, especially someone like the Tees Valley. It's another chance to kick the government.
Well,
I mean, or Labour.
Unlike you, John.
Well, you love this thing. Yeah, hence
the
podcast.
You said it with a weird amount of venom there. Like, unlike freaks like you.
We're all guilty, aren't we?
Okay. Something else we got wrong. Tees Valley. We all, I think, thought that Labour had had a difficult time, but we thought probably they'd pulled it back.
Tees Valley, I'm actually still really upset about. Yeah. I think, yeah, there's always one. Well, I mean, I guess for your conservative listeners, there isn't always one thing from an election that haunts them, but there's always one thing after the rest of the pain has faded and still really hurts you. And I just think Sue Jeffries, who just really, really thought it through, right? And,
She put a lot of effort into, like, working out what she would do as mayor. She probably had, like, you know, one of those day planners where, like, she knew exactly what was on the agenda for every day of the next 3 years.
Well, it's like, when New Labour introduced that first crop of elected mayors and, you know, what was it, Hangus the Monkey in Hartlepool, like, you know.
Served three terms.
Well, yeah, he was very good, and he did give... Oh, no,
he wasn't allowed... They abolished the post.
Well, he wasn't allowed to give free bananas for school children, which was one of his... Anyway, I digress. But, you know, yeah, you don't get any prizes for earnestness when the electoral wins are against you.
And Ben Houchen, who is the new Tory mayor of the Tees Valley, was basically campaigning via troll.
He did say,
why don't we scrap Cleveland Police or nationalise an airport, or, like... And I think something we all got wrong about Tees Valley, actually, is we were all kind of thinking of it as sort of greater Middlesbrough, and therefore, you know, this is Labour heartlands, actually, it also included Darlington, which is pretty Tory,
Michael
right?
Michael Fallon's also.
Yeah, I mean, so that is actually the other thing that I think in terms of... Because, you know, the good thing about getting things wrong is they're a really good example to... a good way of, like, finding your sort of prejudices. I mean, obviously, we've got the excuse that you're from Romford and I'm from East London. I mean, you are a traitor to your kin.
I know.
Because I think there was an interesting north-south bias in a lot of the commentary. I was looking at the Centre for Cities things they did where they totted up how the places voted, right? And there was no reason for us to go, oh, West Midlands, anyone could get that, but go, oh, Tees Valley, Labour. Right, though, in terms of like, the actual voters there, it's just, you hear the word West Midlands and you're like, yeah, that's full of dynamic, like, people who might vote Tory. And you, like, hear the word Tees Valley and you're like, oh.
You think the transporter bridge closed down Steelworks, don't you?
I think the difference is, if you're a politico, you think of the West Midlands, you think, oh, a lot of marginals around there. Whereas Tees Valley, to the best of my knowledge, historically, there have not been marginals, but it's more finely balanced in the safe seats, if you look at them as a collection, than we imagined it to be.
Yeah, exactly. For, you know, it's sort of like the electoral push the Tories need to win a lot of those seats isn't that big. Like, look at Tom Blenkinsop's old seat. Redcar has changed hands recently. So really, like, you know, although they may have been held by Labour for decades, actually, their position there is much more precarious than anyone would give it credit for.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and in terms of other people who did much better than the... So obviously, like, you know, Steve Rotherham very much was kind of like the another well-known brand Labour candidate, right? He performed exactly as you'd expect a Labour candidate to do. Someone who did not perform how a Labour candidate, and I think this is a bigger thing we got wrong over a longer period of time, was Andy Burnham.
Yeah. I mean, there was that week in 2015 when both you and I wrote quite damning columns about him and you got shouted at by his staff.
I mean,
so
actually,
that's been on for a while.
I didn't write a column. I wrote a piece in which I was like, why this tactic won't work. I actually never wrote a bad column. But, I mean, obviously, I said lots of critical things. But yeah, it was very strange because they also, they clearly thought, I don't know, that I was your boss, which seems strange, seeing as at the time we both had the word editor in our title. So you're just like, just from an organogram perspective, I don't understand, like, the thinking.
So I'm 10 years older than you.
Yeah, but you're actually depressingly aging better than I am.
I mean, I do have a sort of boyish youthfulness.
Yeah. I'm actually going grey. I thought that was just like something that happened to my mum from like the stress of like raising a child on her own with no money, but it turns out just bad DNA.
Okay, I want to come back to the Burnham thing later on. But just briefly, one thing I feel we did not get wrong, or certainly I've been thinking this for a while, and I think I said it on the podcast a few times, was that Andy Street would win the West Midlands. I felt that for quite a while.
I think you didn't get that wrong.
I had
my too clever by half. Oh, the Tories won't get transfers.
But also, I mean, I don't feel quite as bad about that one because there was, 4,000 votes in it?
Yeah.
It was knife-edge stuff. And obviously now it's been sold as a triumph for, I don't know, someone said, you know, it's an indication of the electoral potency of Mayite conservatism. I just think it's a, you know, a straight fight between a very good candidate and a candidate who ultimately was just a bit of a machine politician.
I think it's evidence of quite how bad a candidate Sean Simon was. He was deeply complacent about the whole thing.
I mean, we'd sort of good reason if he only lost by 4,000. But I mean, you know, I don't think it's been sold as a triumph, but...
But this is a weird thing. If you look at the three where Tories beat Labour candidates in runoff, they were all incredibly close. It was all within a couple of percentage points. Like, there was none of them that, like James Palmer in Cambridgeshire won, like, 56-44 or something. That was a sort of reasonably wide margin of victory. But in the west of England, I think it was 52-48. In the West Midlands, it was like, you know, 50.4 against 49.6 or something. In Tees Valley, it was somewhere between those two, but it was like 51-49. It was very, very close.
There's an interesting split there as well in terms of, is it kind of doing well despite Labour's parlous national poll rating, which you can say it is in, say, the Tees Valley, or is it, you know, taking the supporters for granted, which you can say of Sean Simon?
Well, we'll be back in a little bit for some more Andy Burnham chat, but first we're going to hear from those guys at the Centre for Cities. I am joined now by two of our friends and colleagues from the Centre for Cities, Andrew Carter, who you're running the place these days, aren't you? It's your show now.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah, and Paul Swinney, who is the sort of economics brains of the operation. So, first off, did we all enjoy the elections last week? Did we have fun?
I think we did. I think it was a really, really enjoyable experience. I was really heartened by the enthusiasm in those areas, but also the enthusiasm and the interest in the wider country, and particularly in the wider media as well. I think lots of people were giving it a, you know, this will be all terrible and no one will really notice. I don't think that was the case. I'm really heartened by it, and afterwards as well.
Mm. So what do we think of the turnout, Paul? Like, because it did, there was quite a range on show, wasn't there, between, what was it, 21% in Tees Valley and 34%, I think, in Cambridgeshire. So is that a bit depressing?
Well, I think if you look at the numbers, perhaps in isolation, you think, yes, it's quite low, but it was definitely above our expectations. I think others' expectations about how many people would come out. So actually, we were quite pleased about that. I think if you look at, the issue is that I think at the moment, perhaps the electorate don't fully understand what the role of a Metro Mayor is, particularly with the general election being called a few weeks after, perhaps it added a bit of confusion as well. You would hope that a couple of years down the line, when the new candidates have come in, done a fantastic job, no pressure there, actually they then better understand about the role that the Mayor's got, the importance of that, and hopefully turnout will go up. And I believe that's what happened in London as well. So it's about trying to understand the role of the Mayor, and the implications that has for that area.
No, I looked this up. I think London in 2000, the first mayoral election, had turnout of just 34%. And that's with, you know, a lot of national media attention, which obviously these races by and large did not get.
No,
yes.
So I think under the circumstances, getting 29% in Manchester for what was basically a dead cert for Andy Burnham is actually a good mandate.
Yeah. Really. And, you know, the London mayoral won the most recent. We had, what, 45, 46%? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think there's a general improvement. I don't know the numbers. You probably know the numbers better than me, John. But, you know, compared to local government elections... Yeah. I think some of those numbers look pretty healthy to me.
I think they're within a range. I don't think it's like local government elections. You get like 6% or something. I think 20-30 is often about the normal.
Right.
So these weren't sort of shockingly low numbers, but there's a whole sort of Rorschach diagram thing going on, isn't there, where people who don't like the idea or don't like the winner can say, well, you know, the turnout was so low, it doesn't really count. But I'm sad enough to have run the numbers on this on Friday. I worked out that 20% of eligible voters in London voted for Sadiq Khan last year, whereas 18% of eligible voters in Greater Manchester voted for Andy Burnham. Okay. So it's very difficult to say that Sadiq has a mandate and Burnham doesn't, I think.
Yeah, and that mandate will be strengthened and their legitimacy will be strengthened as they get into the role. You know, as they take on... You know, the leadership of the place. I think that's the difference that we'll hopefully see now in these mayors. They're not leaders of the council. They're not leaders of an institution, really. They're leaders of the place. And if they really adhere to that and make that their own, then I think that brings its own legitimacy, which will both be good for them in the short run, but also good for the mayoral institution over the next 5, 10, 15 years. Mm.
So I don't want to spend too long on the politics. I kind of want to get onto the wonkish stuff, but... Were there any results you were surprised by particularly?
Well, certainly I think the Tees Valley one was a bit of a surprise. I think if you look at the voting history in that area, you know, very much traditional Labour Labour voting, and Tories won. Now, there'd been some rumours beforehand that actually Ben Houchin was making quite a good run at the seat, and indeed he sort of came out and he did win. But I think that's probably the big one, which you wouldn't have expected. And certainly when George Osborne started on this agenda a couple of years ago, definitely wouldn't have been a place that the Tories would have been picking out as a win. But I think the very fact that they did get the Tories did get four wins, you know, out of six, is a surprise in itself. I think if you look back to the start of the agenda, there's some questions about why Osborne was pursuing this. This is Labour heartland type territory. You know, isn't this giving Labour politicians more and more power? And actually, sort of the reflections now is that the Tories have done pretty well in perhaps in some areas that traditionally haven't done so well. So it's quite interesting in terms of the political dynamic and then implications that has for sort of the city agenda, the devolution agenda, with central government, given that it seems that there's been a bit of a shift under May's leadership about the role of devolution and the importance of devolution.
Yeah, I mean, we did think maybe that the Lib Dems would have a bigger showing, although they actually only just missed out on first preferences in the west of England. But obviously the one that was too close to call and went really to the wire was the West Midlands, where, you know, in theory, Sean Simon should have won it, given previous polling, but actually...
He certainly thought so.
yeah, whereas in fact it was Andy Street, which I think is interesting. And, you know, not to overplay this, but, you know, again, I think, you know, it's an interesting one where, you know, maybe people are making different decisions, not only on party political lines. You know, London, typically a Labour city, has had a Conservative mayor. You know, West Midlands, maybe, you know, particularly some of the bigger areas, typically Labour, now has a conservative mayor. So I think part of it is that it opens up opportunities, and that pragmatism, how you're going to do the job, ultimately matters more than the politics of your particular party. Mm.
There were some concerns before the election, I think, that if it was a run of Labour victories, that support would not be forthcoming from central government. Do you, Theresa May is not someone who one can imagine enthusiastically embracing internal opposition, let's put it that way. do you think that the fact that four of these new mayors are Conservatives will actually kind of lead to a sort of resurgence in interest again in central government in what was, you know, an Osborne policy,
yeah,
really?
I think so. I think it's really important. I think, and if you think about the objective of the Conservative government from 10 onwards, was to make progress in the Midlands and in the North, particularly urban or partly urban seats. They've done that through the mayoral contest to a degree. I think they will make some gains in the general election on urban seats. And I think that brings a requirement from Conservative government to safeguard and maintain those seats for the next election. So I think that does give, hopefully gives, a real shot in the arm for the urban policy agenda, both in relation to specifically in relation to the mayors, making sure that, you know, they are regarded as successful, but also more generally, if we see those gains in the general election, that the Conservatives will think harder about urban policy issues than they maybe historically have. And I think that is an important and interesting different dynamic that we'll see.
Yeah, and I think it's... A lot of the Conservative candidates were selling themselves on the fact that actually there's a Tory government and they have a link into the Prime Minister. I think quite a few of them said, oh, we know Theresa May personally and we know we can get on the phone to them. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know, but they were certainly trying to sell it on that line. I think it actually poses an interesting question for Greater Manchester and Liverpool City Region about how they go about interacting with central government as well. I mean, if we assume that there will be a Tory government after the next election, what does that then mean in terms of how Andy Burnham tries to go and deal with the government? What does it mean in terms of Steve Rotherham, who obviously has got quite strong links to Corbyn leadership within the Labour Party? How does he interact with central government and how does he get things done? Because part of this is going to be about relationship building at the local level, but part of it's going to be about relationship building with central government too. It's going to be a crucial part of the role, and I think they have to think quite hard about how they get around that.
Yeah, and I think Sadiq's been pretty successful, with the exception of DFT, I think. He's been pretty successful establishing a positive relationship and a positive working relationship across his policy briefs in relation to with the Conservative government. So, again, I think it can be done for certain.
So As we discussed, you know, the turnout, while not as terrible as perhaps some people have said, was also not amazing. I think awareness of these new posts is perhaps not as high as city nerds like us may have hoped for. My dad actually lives in Birmingham, and he did tell me that had it not been for me popping up every couple of months to go and try and tell someone, he wouldn't have even known there was a bloody election on. So what kind of things do you think these six new mayors need to do in the next few months to kind of just sort of make everyone sit up and think, oh, that's why they're here?
Well, they're going to need something probably quite eye-catching in the early days. I mean, that's what's interesting about, say, Ben Houchin in the Tees Valley. He didn't have a manifesto, which actually in some ways is a bit odd. How do you sort of then go and win an election if you haven't even got a manifesto? But one of the big things he did say was that he would nationalise Durham Tees Valley Airport. Now, agree with that or not, and it's a little... It's also a bit odd that perhaps a Conservative candidate would say he would nationalise something. But having said that, actually did get him a bit of coverage. And I think what we would generally hope from the mayors is that they are going to come out with bold new thinking. We may not agree with everything that they come out with, but it's things like that that are quite eye-catching. And I think they probably have to be quite visible in these first 100 days, do something. What they need to do, though, however, is actually set up what they, in their own minds, what they're going to do in these first 100 days. And it's not clear yet for all of the new mayors that actually do have that nailed down.
Yeah, I think it's in many respects, despite them being the mayors, I think they are still and should still be in campaigning mode. I think there is an almost campaigning mindset that they need to continue to have, even while they're in office, about raising awareness, banging the drum, you know, helping people understand what the role in the institution of the mayor is, alongside some of the quick wins and the policy decisions that they'll probably need to, you know, to focus on and highlight. But, you know, often we say they have to shift quite quickly from campaigning to delivery. I think in this respect, they may need to stay in that campaigning mode for a bit longer.
Well, the fact there's an election coming up probably.
And it helps, you know, I think in some respects that helps them. You know, it helps them continue to be out there, you know, shaking the hands, doing the meetings, et cetera, that they'll need to, do. I think it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, who would have predicted, maybe we could have seen it with Burnham, but, you know, the first two issues that both the West Midlands mayor and the Greater Manchester mayor have focused their attention on is homelessness. A very emotional, emotive subject that everybody broadly agrees, you know, everybody agrees that's a, you know, it's a bad thing, we need to address it. And immediately, you know, it garners a coalition of interest. It raises, you know, if you start in into a very niche conversation about some topic that really does matter to people in many respects, but they haven't. They've chosen two big subjects, two highly sort of emotive subjects to start their mayoralty around. I think that's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. It'd been interesting to see how many of the briefings that were prepared for the combined authorities had homelessness in there, which is another issue about how mayors conduct themselves.
I am sort of interested to see how those two guys work together, actually, because I think, like, both Andy Street and Andy Burnham, despite coming from different parties, having spoken to them both, I get the impression they're both quite keen on the idea that the two cities can, between them, can kind of combine to provide counterweight to London. And I can actually sort of imagine them, like, working together on some stuff to talk about rebalancing the economy. I don't know what you guys think.
I definitely think there's a role for them both to be learning from each other, and I think they should be having conversations around that and thinking about urban policy. I think Sadiq Khan has been quite good, and indeed Boris Johnson was good as well, about talking to the Core Cities organisation, you know, over the years, and trying to understand, well, what's good for the urban agenda, not just what's good for London. But I think there's an element of... you get a little bit this with the Northern Powerhouse idea, where it's sort of like, well, we'll all be better together and we'll all get along very nicely, but actually, ultimately, you know, Manchester is probably better positioned currently to get investment than a lot of other places across the north of England. If and when that happens, actually, I'm sure that a lot of places won't be so happy to be collaborating with Manchester and be more like, well, why is Manchester getting everything and we don't? So I think there's an element of, yes, definitely collaborate where you can, but at the same time, actually do have this focus principally about how you tackle the challenges and embrace the opportunities within your area. So in the West Midlands, what are you doing about skills? How are you trying to make the West Midlands a more attractive place for business investment, attracting those businesses in, creating jobs and putting money in people's pockets? And I think it's about having that economic policy over the one area that people live and work their lives over, And sure, go and have a chat with your colleagues elsewhere and understand what they're doing and see what you can do together to improve the lives of people in both areas. But also, you know, don't lose focus on the fact that, you know, you've got one city region here that you're trying to attract investment into.
I think that's right. But, you know, I wouldn't underestimate, though, their, you know, their requirement and their responsibility to be part of that agenda about pulling power and resources away from Westminster and Whitehall. And that means, you know, they're big places, they're, you know, big personalities with a big mandate. It's going to be important for them to work together with other the other elected mayors and London to, you know, to make sure that that process of devolution, of decentralisation, whatever you use the term yeah. as you see fit, that they're able to do that. And that's not just because it's good for their place. You know, there are arguments about that's good for the country. So they are part of a bigger political agenda, which is about moving power away. And I hopefully by working together, I think we can continue to make some progress on that.
Yeah.
What happens to the areas that didn't get over the line with the deals? Because there are, and you know, some of these are quite significant cities. There are no mayors in Leeds or Sheffield or Newcastle yeah. or Nottingham. Yeah. What's going to happen with these places, do you think?
Well, wow. So I think we've got the Metro Mayors over these half a dozen places. I think we need to make sure that they're successful, they do what's required, and they get the support that's needed from government in order to do that. We've already talked about that. I think there is a job of work to be done by the new government to sit down at the table again with the remaining bigger cities. So Newcastle, etc., Leeds and its environs, Sheffield, at the very least, to work again and think heavily, focused on getting those places into the same place. I think that's, you know, that is a, I think that's a job of work that will need to be done by the new government, and the cities themselves, or the city regions themselves, will need to come to the table. And then I think there's a broader set of questions and issues about if we're interested in economic growth and political revival across the country, what other arrangements might we need for medium-sized or smaller-sized cities who may not need all of the governance arrangements and all of the governance structures that we've gone down in the bigger cities. But I think we do need a concerted effort to see if we can get Leeds and Sheffield and Newcastle over the line.
Mm. There's an interesting dynamic here. I think when you sort of, we talk about mayors, we talk about these six areas, but actually one of the things that actually does strike you is not just the places that have got the mayors, but actually the places that haven't, and all the cities that you're mentioning there, John. It's quite interesting in terms of the political dynamics of this, because we haven't got Cameron Osborne leadership anymore, which we're very keen on this, and I think probably some of the places that were doing some of the horse trading that then didn't get a devolution deal were originally counting on Osborne in particular still being in post, so you sort of lost the big sort of standard bearer for this. But having said that, you then have got this political outcome of four Conservative mayors, which may sort of reignite the sort of the clamour for devolution at the national level, seeing sort of the implications it might have for the Conservative Party. So that could be a good thing, but then at the same time, on top of that, you could then have Labour leaders locally in certain cities going, well, hang on a minute, we've just had this mayor put in place in other places and the Tories did quite well. We don't think that's a good thing. So I think there's all sorts of dynamics going on there. Ultimately, we think that having a mayor is a good thing for the people who live in and around the city regions that we're talking about. You think it'll improve their economy, improve the number of jobs available, and improve the amount of money that's in their pockets. And so we think that all parties should be pushing forward to try and get this. But it'll be very interesting to see post-general election what the position will be around it.
It's always cruel to get people to make predictions, even when there isn't an election in the offing. But like, give me a couple of things to look out for in this agenda over the next few months.
It feels like the national parties are not saying a great deal about perhaps policies generally, but certainly have said very little about devolution. I don't know whether that will change given the results last week and whether they'll start saying something, but I think you're either looking for something in the manifestos or looking for something in the first 100 days about commitment there. I think then you're looking at what do the new mayors actually do, what noises do they make in their first 100 days, understanding what's going on in the different areas, and then trying to see if there's a reaction from those places that don't have a mayor about, or well, are they coming out and making noises about trying to get a devolution deal? Are they looking to go and have conversations with central government, with politicians, sort of post-general election, about, well, actually, do you know what? These are the places that have got a mayor. We want to have one now. Can we reopen the discussions?
Yeah, I think you want to see the mayors setting out their vision and their perspective for their area, and showing how they're going to bring together different organisations, often with different political interests, to make those sorts of things happen. You know, I think we have to recognise that they'll need an element of settling in, but I think looking to them now to take the leadership, and
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see a joint statement or joint arrangement or joint event where the six mayors plus Khan come together on a platform very visibly to both articulate, you know, why it's a good thing to have metro mayors, but actually what they as a collective require from central government in order for them to be successful.
Do you think we're likely to need to wait till after the election's out of the way before you can get Labour and Tory mayors on the platform together pushing a shared agenda?
Possibly. I wouldn't rule it out, though. I wouldn't rule out the fact that, you know, within the general election space, it gives them an opportunity to begin to do that preparatory work and to begin to make those requests of central government. So I wouldn't rule it out that you'll see something pretty soon, I think.
The election definitely throws a spanner in the works. I think if it wasn't there, then we'd probably expect them to come out together quite quickly, wouldn't we? And say, we've now been elected, momentum's with us, this is who we are, this is what we want. Whether there's sort of, you know, any issues at national level and the party saying, no, you can't stand on the same platforms, you don't know. But, I mean, it is an area, it is a time to influence, I suppose, as Andrew says, is one of the ways to look at it.
I'd be surprised. It'd be interesting to see how much electioneering the mayors ultimately do in their place. My bet is that they won't do very much. They will stay away from the electioneering for the general election in their patch now, and quite rightly will adopt that role of leader of their place, and they'll work with whoever it is that's in power.
Well, we'll find out soon enough.
Indeed.
Paul, Andrew, thank you very much.
Cheers, John.
So, Patrick, it's just you and I now, and I've got a confession. You were right and I was wrong. Andy Burnham, he really nailed this one.
How you laughed when I said I was a Burnhamite with a straight face. Turns out I was right.
Yeah, no, you were. And I'm genuinely rethinking a lot of things about my attitude towards Andy Burnham. Because let's talk about the result in Manchester for a little bit. So it was, you know, Labour did win a few things elsewhere, but I think the difference for the Greater Manchester one was he was really outperforming where you would expect him to. Like, he in a field of eight, which was, you know, a fairly certain election, we all knew he was going to win, he still got 63% of first preferences.
Everywhere. He won everywhere.
He won all 10 of the boroughs, including Trafford, which is Tory-held and where his Tory opponent, Sean Anstey, came from. He won, he won something like all but three wards, I think, in the entire Greater Manchester.
And he also, perversely, the narrative, and it's not an untrue one now, is that the Tories benefit from UKIP's collapse. Burnham was not only winning Tory voters, where the UKIP vote had collapsed, it was benefiting him. Or there was a net benefit of Burnham and that there was no Tory gain. So it is quite phenomenal. And I think it speaks to the qualities that I have, you know, argued for in Andy Burnham for a long time, and you haven't seen until now.
I mean, yeah, I definitely think there is an element of, it's not that I think any of my criticisms were wrong necessarily. I think he has been a bit, not even that slipperiness is the problem, but he's not always been very competent in the nature of his slipperiness. I think it's just that matters much more to people inside the bubble than to people outside who just seem like he's clearly a nice bloke. He's clearly a local lad who like genuinely cares about both the city and the broader north. The Hillsborough thing obviously plays very well for him.
Obviously, he has that very very powerful demographic appeal. But also, I mean, he showed an imagination that was sort of escaped a lot of Labour. You know, Sean Simon ran on the sort of, I'm the Labour guy, and also let's, you know, use the St George's Cross and take back control. Whereas Burnham had actually developed a very comprehensive policy platform and thought, if these things are going to work, which, you know, it's still up in the air whether they will, it needs to be a bottom-up thing rather than a top-down machine politician thing. And you know, as was the case with him, because sort of crowdsourcing his manifesto, I think he did a very good job.
Yeah, no, it's, there is no way of looking at that result which doesn't look like a hell of a mandate. Like I kind of So turnout in Greater Manchester is 29%, which doesn't sound that amazing, except the turnout in the first London mayoral election back in the year 2000 was just 34%. And that obviously had a huge amount of media attention and was also a much more competitive election, I think.
And, you know, and Sean Anstey's, I saw you tweeted this yesterday, Sean Anstey's reply, or it wasn't Sean Anstey, Tory...
It was a Tory councillor in Trafford, it wasn't Sean Anstey.
Saying, you know, our voters won't turn out. Well, that sounds especially like the inverse of the, you know, the Corbynite fallacy, which is, you know, yeah, if only the non-voters voted, they'd come out for the socialist utopia. But actually the makeup of the demographics would have been very, very similar in terms of who turned out, and yet Burnham, you know, ran away with it. Especially when you compare it to Rotherham, where Rotherham performed exactly in line with the sort of parliamentary arithmetic.
Yeah, and turnout in Liverpool is lower as well. It's 26 as opposed to 29, I think. But yeah, no, I crunched the numbers. If you kind of multiply turnout by the number of people who voted for him in the first round, it's about 18% of the Greater Manchester electorate came out to vote for Andy Burnham, which, you know, that doesn't sound that impressive, except if you run the same equation on the 2016 London election, it's 20% of the London electorate voted for Sadiq Khan on the first round, and, you know, nobody would seriously question Sadiq's mandate to run this place.
Well, exactly.
And that's the same kind of number.
Yeah, exactly. What was it after the 2015 election? I am one of the 74%. I'm not one of the 26% who votes for the Tories. You know, these things are decided on who turns out to vote and who cares. So, you know, by any chalk, Burnham has, you know, won the day and won the future.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not, you're not a Mancunian from Sefton, just over in...
Well, I mean, just
very
as...
very fine Liverpool city region next door.
Andy Burnham was born in Old Roan, also part of Sefton. So, the way I talk about Andy Burnham on this podcast sort of implies that I have a poster on my wall. I don't, because you can't buy them anywhere. But if anyone knows, please let me know.
But I was going to ask, as our representative of the North on the podcast, as the spokesman for Northern Youth, what do you want to see these guys do?
That's a very, very good question, John. I'd like to see them stick up for the North on the, I've spoken before about the Burnham-Rotherham sort of cool dad axis. I'd like to see that, you know, that's going to be a very effective way of continuing some of the work. Say, Joe Anderson has done, peace be upon him, in sort of cutting deals and getting a good settlement, which will be very difficult for the Tories to resist now, by the way, now they've got Andy Street, Ben Howshen and Tim Bolt.
And James Palmer.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's in the Tories' incentive to make these sort of laboratories for localism work. It's going to be very interesting to see what Burnham does with Devo Manck in terms of integrating health and social care. I think, you know, he's a pretty deep thinker on this issue, and this could provide a blueprint for, you know, how we deal with the health and social care nightmare that's, you know, creeping, well, has already crept up on us, but no one's paying attention to it because of Brexit. So it'll be
That's something we've not talked about very much around here, because it's like, it gets very technical. I used to be a health reporter. It gets very technical very quickly, and it's quite difficult to make it sound interesting unless it's stories about, you know, old ladies being left in corridors or something.
But I mean, in short, you know, one wants to see these Labour mayors use their platforms and their powers as incubators for sort of radical social democratic policy. And with the Tories having every incentive to make these things work, I don't see any reason why not, but I suppose we'll see.
The single policy I would be most interested in seeing coming out of this is one that was kind of talked about a lot a couple of years ago and sort of quietly got dropped, is what was incorrectly referred to as HS3, the idea is a new railway link across the North.
Cross over the North.
Yes, which is actually a much better label for it, because HS3 implies it's high speed, and it really wouldn't be high speed.
Well, yeah, there's a very good line someone used once in a piece about devolution, which was something like, you know, the funniest thing about the fast train from Liverpool to Leeds is that it doesn't exist. So, you know, that was the first thing gone in 2015 or 2016, wherever it was. You know, they said, we're not going to electrify the Trans-Pennine route. So if they can sort of get the government in a headlock and say, you know, put your money where your mouth is and let's recalibrate or, you know, rebalance the economic settlement in the UK, which, you know, with May's sort of muscular statism in targeted intervention, I can sort of foresee that happening, although that's wishful thinking.
Well, we shall see. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we go. I'd normally say I would be back next week. I will not be back next week because I'm off to Montreal for a conference about trains, which I'm very excited about. But realistically, not going to have a chance to put out a podcast. So we'll be back in 2 weeks.